Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Radio Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy. And Sherry Edwards is off working on the soundhealthportal.com. The Sound Health Portal is a great resource. I highly recommend going to the soundhealthportal.com, scrolling down, looking at the campaigns, which is the current software packages that you can have your vocal print or vocal recording run through and receive reports on. And if you scroll down, there was neuroplasticity and PTSD, BioDiet, and there was still the Corona Conflicts software. You can sign up for a free account by giving them your email. The system walks you through doing 2 45-second recordings. You choose the campaign that you want to have your vocal print or vocal recording run through. And within 2 to maybe 12 hours, I don't think I've ever waited that long, more like 10 hours, you'll get a report back with a lot of information just showing where there might be states of imbalance in your vocal print, which if you want to find out more about all that, because that's a whole show unto itself, you can go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on In the News, and look there. And there are many demos, demonstrations by Sherry Edwards, talking about how it works, showing you the how, the what. And it's really worthy viewing because there's a lot of really great information that Sherry demonstrates in doing a vocal print, and you get to see the actual Sound Health Portal in action, meaning the kinds of charts that she's developed and created with her software developers to demonstrate the vocal print and what it looks like and where things might be. There's this really wonderful pie chart, which shows you just visually right away, you can go, oh, that's the thing I want to look at right now. And then you can kind of cascade out from there and look at the states of imbalance. If you want to find out more about that, go to soundhealthoptions.com. As I say, click on In the News and you'll see demonstrations that recent demonstrations or older demonstrations. You can pick the software you want to learn about. Probably done a demonstration on that. For replays of this show, if you go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on Radio, and then click on Sound Health Radio, you'll see today's show with Dr. W. Gifford Jones and Diana Gifford Jones. You'll see at the top that promo, and above that, you'll see links to either Stitcher or Pocket Casts. My favorite podcast aggregator is Pocket Casts, which is now free, and it's a cross-platform piece of software that you can have on your phone, your laptop, your tablet, any number of devices. If I'm listening to a show on my phone and then I go to listen to it on the computer, it syncs across everything. And that's one of my favorite parts about it is I can always listen to the same show right where I left off really easily. One of the other things I like about it very much is the ability to share a show from Pocket Cast. You can also do this from Stitcher or on iOS. They use an app called Podcast. And I'm not sure how you share those, but I know that in Pocket Cast, you can click on the three dots and you'll have a choice to share the show. And this is going to be one of those shows with Doc Gift talking about vitamin C where it's really, it's a common sense. We were just talking about that. A world of great information about vitamin C. And we're talking to one of the people that is a knower of amazing amounts of information and experience with vitamin C. With that, Dr. Ken Walker, who writes under the pseudonym of Dr. W. Gifford Jones, MD, is a graduate of the University of Toronto and the Harvard Medical School. He trained in general surgery at Strong Memorial Hospital, University of Rochester, Montreal General Hospital, McGill University, and in gynecology at Harvard. His storied medical career began as a general practitioner, ship's surgeon, and hotel doctor. For more than 40 years, he specialized in gynecology, devoting his practice to the formative issues of women's health. For 45 years, he has written a medical column for 75 North American newspapers. Today, the readership remains over 7 million. His advice column contains a solid dose of common sense, and he never sits on the fence with controversial issues. He's the author of 9 books, including his autobiography, You're Going to Do What? What I Learned as a Medical Journalist, and 90 Plus, How I Got There. Many years ago, he was successful in a fight to legalize heroin used to help ease the pain of terminal cancer patients. His foundation at that time donated $500,000 to establish the Gifford Jones Professorship in Pain Control and Palliative Care at the University of Toronto Medical School. Today, Doc Gift's daughter, Diana Gifford Jones, joins Doc Gifford Jones to talk about Linus Pauling and scientific evidence of vitamin C. Welcome, Dr. Gift and Diana. Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning. I'm so happy we're all gathered together here. I want to ask, this is derived from one of your amazing articles, and I've put many links to articles and references and to Doc Gift's amazing resource of 18 years or more years of articles now on his website. It's really amazing, docgift.com. Why are humans like guinea pigs and not dogs?
Well, humans lost the ability, Richard, eons and eons ago to produce vitamin C, so that no human produced vitamin C. The only two animals that produce that don't produce vitamin C are the guinea pig and the fruit fly. And so that of course, the guinea pig makes it an excellent research animal to research the vitamin C. So that it was really a very, very bad genetic move when eons ago we lost the ability to produce vitamin C, which is very much like glucose, actually. And animals make vitamin C by changing the glucose molecule. But anyway, it's resulted in a huge amount of cardiovascular disease, and certainly in terms of the current situation with the virus, the term pandemic that is going on, it's caused a lot of confusion. And I think basically that a lot of people are going to and have died needlessly because of inadequate medical care.
And do we have any idea, was it just a fluke, a genetic skip in the evolution of humankind that we lost the ability to produce vitamin C? Do we know that we were able to do it and then we lost it?
No, we were able to do it and lost it, and I have no idea how we lost it. But it goes back, you know, several million years.
So my dog is smarter than me. I've always thought so.
Your dog manufactures 5,000 milligrams every day, which is sort of ridiculous. You know, when you think, Richard, that humans are supposed to only get along with 90 milligrams a day, and here we have your dog manufacturing 5,000 milligrams daily. And if they develop a fight with the next door neighbor's dog and get injured, or they develop a severe infection, that dog that was making just 5,000 milligrams a day will immediately start making 100,000.
Wow.
So it shows the from an evolutionary standpoint, it shows that somehow that dog knows that he's damn sick and he better make a lot of vitamin C.
Wow. That's amazing. I read that and it amazes me every time I read it. Go ahead, Diana.
I want to add a point to that too, because it's not just, you know, what's interesting about that is not just if a dog has an infection does the increase in production happen. But when my dad was talking a moment ago about the fight with the dog next door, you know, that's a stress kind of situation. So I want to emphasize that you need vitamin C to help your body function when you're stressed, let alone, you know, not necessarily even injured or infected, just stressed.
Yes, when you're under stress, Diana, say preoperatively, or a stressful psychological situation, your vitamin C can decrease as much as 90%, and that can be difference between sometimes life and death.
And I want to step sideways for a moment. About what is the cost of a gram of vitamin C? Does anybody in this group know? Just ballparkish.
Oh, cents a day, a few cents a day.
Right.
20 cents a day. 20 cents a day.
And is there any harm in taking a gram or up to like just sort of as an average daily thing, like let's say 3 grams a day spread throughout the day. That's only 3 grams. That's only 3,000 milligrams. Is there any, you know, hazard there?
There's no hazard at all. In fact, Richard, you cannot overdose with vitamin C. No one's died of an overdose. You can take, when you're treating infectious disease, you may have to use 300,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenously to rid yourself of the infection. So it's a totally safe drug. It's relatively cheap. I wrote an article recently. You're not old enough as I am to know that during the war they used to have these dances for servicemen, and you can pay 10 cents a dance to get a dance with a pretty girl. 10 cents a dance with a pretty girl. For another 10 cents, 20 cents a day, you can get all the vitamins you need to possibly rid yourself of the current COVID-19 virus.
That's amazing, and later on in the conversation, I think I'll use the word appalling, but for now, I'll say that's amazing. In your last year of Harvard Medical School, you discovered, or it was discovered, that you had polio. Was that your introduction to Klenner's work, or were you already aware of him? So if you talk about that whole thing, please.
No, when I was in my last year of medical school, I did develop polio and temporarily lost the power in my legs. Luckily, gradually, you know, with physiotherapy and so forth, got over it. But no, my first introduction to vitamin C was Linus Pauling. After I got into medical practice and started writing a medical column, I had the great privilege of interviewing Linus Pauling in Toronto on two occasions for 2 hours each, two
wow.
hours each time. Just a charming, brilliant gentleman. And so that was my first experience. Of course, my daughter's heard about it ever since.
I bet. I'd be telling everybody, too, if I talked to Linus Pauling. I'd still be telling people about it. That would be amazing to sit with the genius of Linus Pauling. Let me go back to Klenner for a minute, and then we'll jump back to Linus Pauling. Dr. Klenner's work, he had done a study of his own, I guess, giving patients 100,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenous with polio. Was
right.
he a heretic at the time? I mean, how did he...
Tremendously a heretic and a brilliant heretic. And you know, Frederick Klenner was just a family doctor. He had absolutely no training in virology. He didn't have a fancy lab to back him up. He was just a small-town family doctor. And how he ever got the idea to give intravenous vitamin C to 60 polio patients, 100,000 milligrams a day, and not one of them developed polio. And here I was at the time at the Harvard Medical School, one of the great medical institutions of the world, and my professors would visit me daily and say, "Oh, your legs are getting weaker, but we don't have any treatment for it." And here, if I'd only been in a small town in North Carolina with a family doctor, he could have saved my paralysis. Rather ironic.
That's amazing. That's truly amazing. And from my reading of your material, you talked about that based on Kleiner's work, and I think he may have worked with other such things as meningitis, rattlesnake bite. I mean, that's a radical idea. Rattlesnake bite.
Yes. See, most doctors, Richard, will they would rather stand by and do absolutely nothing and see their patient die than admit that vitamin C is more than just a vitamin. Mm. Vitamin C is an antioxidant, and it's an antibiotic, so that there hasn't been one viral disease that ever has been diagnosed that cannot be treated successfully with intravenous vitamin C.
And why does this have to be?
Challenge.
Go ahead, Diana.
You know,
go ahead.
You know, the big challenge. I think you know, you can hear the frustration in my dad's voice about this, and it must be really frustrating when you've got that kind of experience and you've been reading the research for years and you've been arguing the case forever. But you know, the part that's hard is that in 2020, you know, times have changed and you won't find a doctor like Dr. Kleiner today that will feel comfortable, will feel safe doing those kinds of, what did you call them, sort of radical, contrarian approaches, because they run too many risks in doing so. There's too many regulatory punishments for experimentation or for trying, remedies outside of what the sort of National Institutes of Health publish as saying it's okay. So that leaves a lot of handcuffs on a lot of doctors, limiting what they can actually do in the way of treatment.
I just think I'm out of the gate early using that appalling. I just think it's appalling that everything that your father knows and Linus Pauling knows and Dr. Kleiner's experience, that vitamin C is still this, it almost seems hated by the medical industry. I don't talk about this much, but 6 or 7 years ago, I have no sense of time. 6 or 7 years ago, I was in a healthcare facility for a year because I had back-to-back surgeries. And one of the biggest fights I had with my doctor, because it was a big facility, they had a doctor who would come in and treat a floor kind of and monitor you. And one of the biggest fights I had was I had a friend bring me in some powdered vitamin C so I could be taking it every couple of hours post-surgery and just in general. I was in a healthcare facility with 300 other people. You bet I wanted to keep my vitamin C up. And I had a big, many bad words battle with my doctor and the floor nurse about taking vitamin C. Vitamin C? Really? You're pumping me full of all sorts of creepy stuff, and you're going to argue with me about vitamin C. And I don't mean me. I just mean the idea of I wanted to take vitamin C to support my immune system and to help my body detoxify from all of this surgery. And yet it was still that was only 7 years ago. And they were completely opposed. It blows my mind.
You know, Richard, the one thing I have learned over the years is that doctors are not angels. And they can cause a lot of difficulty by not using common sense and that. For instance, in the current pandemic that we're going through, you know, I haven't heard one medical officer of health, one doctor who is involved, doctors who are involved in infectious disease care, and TV, news people like CNN, they always talk about social distancing, using a face mask, and washing your hands. I haven't yet heard one of these people say that by just taking 1 gram of vitamin C 3 times a day, along with maybe 3,000 international units of vitamin D, that this would decrease the number of people developing the COVID-19 virus, and also if they develop it, to decrease the risk of dying. So that there's been a tremendous amount of hypocrisy in terms of educating the public on how they can deal with this pandemic.
It really is. I'm with you in that I listen to a lot of shows every week, health, technical, all sorts of stuff. And I have yet to hear anybody in the regular sort of media realms talk about that at all. There's a lot of magical, you know, we're coming up with this and billions of dollars going to that kind of research and blah, blah, blah. I mean, and yet not once have I heard somebody say exactly what you're saying. How about we support the immune system? Just the term of the supporting the immune system.
Well, that's what you're doing when you're taking that 1 gram of vitamin C, you know, 3 times a day.
It's just, it does really blow my mind that well, let me back up and ask it this way. When you were in medical school, were you like some kind of radical hippie? Meaning, how did you break free from the dogmatic teachings of, you know, pharmaceutical rep is your friend and all that kind of thing, into thinking about vitamin C and considering it and then really getting fully engaged in its usage?
Well, I guess that happened, Richard, when I went into practice and ran into a lack of common sense always. The first thing I got involved with was trying to legalize heroin for terminal cancer patients because it had been available in Great Britain for, you know, 90 years. And so I wrote a New Year's resolution column about it. And I remember the editor of the Niagara Falls Review said, "Oh, you'll get about a dozen replies, applauding you for it." In Niagara Falls, a town of 60,000 at that time, I got over, I think it was 1,200 replies that came in, and it showed that so many people were, you know, involved in care of cancer patients, their loved one was dying of cancer. And it became a very important thing in my life at that time. And I fought for 5 years to get the Canadian government to finally legalize heroin for terminal cancer patients. So it goes back a long way. And Diana, I remember Diana helping me look over those 1,200 letters that came in.
Yeah, I remember sitting at the dining room table and reading the letters as well. And I was a youngster, I think 12 years old, and I was struck by how painful it was to read the letters from people. You know, you sit there and you actually cry because they were telling you about the pain that they'd had watching their loved one die, and, you know, just basically begging my father to take forward the campaign to do something about it. It was a remarkable experience for me, for sure. And we had the opportunity to go to Ottawa and sort of drop these letters on the desk of the Minister of Health, and I'll never forget that as well.
We had 6 green garbage bags full of them.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So you've dragged Diana into being a heretic in a certain way, although as we've discussed backstage, she has a softer presentation of it, but she's still trying to – I've always liked the term corrupt from within, meaning that you get into an industry and then you begin to change the mind of the industry from within versus outside banging on the door. And I think Diana's the secret agent I'm hoping for. And from talking to Diana,
well,
I think
I come at it from a different point of view because I'm not a medical doctor. I'm more of a policymaker. And I feel for the folks that are struggling to make decisions that affect laws and, you know, lives, and they want to do the right thing. I think generally speaking, you know, my father says doctors are not angels. I think they probably think they are angels and they're trying to do the right thing, but they get misled and they get misdirected by very powerful forces in our society that, you know, put very lucrative deals at their fingertips to prescribe drugs and so on. But I think there's a real genuine problem for those that are trying to do the right thing because the information's not clear. And you can just readily today, you do a Google search for, you know, benefits of vitamin C, and just as quickly as you'll find a study that says X is, you know, a study that shows vitamin C is good for X, you'll find another one that says vitamin C is not good for X. and you have to be a bit of a specialist to decipher what's the truth in the situation. And as you get more and more into it, you start to study it further and further, you see that, for example, one study used a dosage of vitamin C that was 10 milligrams a day, and another study used a dosage that was 1,000 milligrams a day. So, of course, you're going to get different results. But the public isn't hearing that level of detail, and nor are the doctors, frankly.
Diana just mentioned a very important thing, the dosage. Linus Pauling used to get so irritated with his critics when they would say, you know, we've taken vitamin C and it hasn't helped our common cold. And then find out they're taking, you know, 100 milligrams of vitamin C. And he kept saying to them, it's the dosage, idiots. It's the dosage. Unless you get the right dosage, you're not going to get the right result. After all, you can't cure pneumonia with a small amount of penicillin. And that's been one of the great problems over the years, that doctors have not realized the importance of dose. You give the most effective dose that's required, and this is usually a very large dose.
And that's a great point for me to ask, if you would talk about the difference of delivery systems, meaning taking oral vitamin C versus IV vitamin C, because when you're talking IV vitamin C, typically you are talking very high doses. So would you talk about those two different delivery systems and the whys?
Yes. For instance, I take 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day in divided doses, and you always take it in divided doses because vitamin C is a water-soluble vitamin, not like vitamin D, where you could take your entire dose in one for the entire month in one day if you wanted to. But every time you urinate, you lose a bit of vitamin C. That's why you should take it three times a day to keep your blood level at a fairly constant level. So that for the average thing, for building up your immunity, taking it orally is perfectly all right. But if you're out in a snowstorm and your car is running out of gas, you're in trouble. And the same reason that if you develop influenza and you haven't been taking vitamin C, so your blood level is low, then it takes you a few time to build it up again. So that's why it's always important to take vitamin C on a regular daily dosage, so your white blood cells are always loaded with vitamin C to fight an infection if you get one. But if you get a serious infection, let's say I come down with influenza and I'm in dire straits, then going directly to intravenous vitamin C is extremely important to get a high dose amount, maybe 100 or 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C immediately. So it all depends on the severity of the illness.
And with I vitamin C, do we reduce the bowel tolerance issue? And could you talk a little bit about bowel tolerance for people?
Yeah. Well, why don't I let you talk about that, Diana?
Well, I think, you know, I'm receiving so many questions from readers, and I do get questions about that. And so this seems like the best scenario is to break up that dosage over the course of the day and take a larger dose before bed and a smaller dose in the morning.
Yes, everyone has a tolerance, Richard, to vitamin C. For instance, we live in a very constipated nation, and we could literally solve constipation in one clear swoop by taking, say, 6,000 milligrams of vitamin C at bedtime. And in all probability, that person will get up in the morning and the first thing they'll do is have a bowel movement. So that we have bowel tolerance. For the average person, taking, say, 2,000, maybe 3,000 milligrams a day, you're not going to get that. But once you get above that dosage, you invariably get diarrhea. So you take it to bowel tolerance, and then when you reach bowel tolerance, you simply cut it back a bit, and that looks after it.
Go ahead, Diana.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions from people about this dosage matter, and I think that's the important message there. There's no specific, you know, daily dose. You want to get a high dose, but whether it's 3,000 milligrams a day or 4,000 milligrams a day or 2,500 milligrams a day, it matters less. You got to see where your system tolerates how much you want. But
go ahead.
No, I was going to say you don't need to be too fixated on exactly what the exact milligrams is.
I always tell people that you'll know when you're taking enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
You'll know.
Yes, you will.
There will be no mistake. You will know when you've reached bowel tolerance. Believe me, you will know.
And I tell people, Richard, that who have a serious illness, and let's say you were in a situation where you were traveling, or you're in North America, and you just don't have the access to intravenous vitamin C. Not many people do, but you could get the same effect if you started taking 2,000 milligrams of powdered vitamin C every hour. You'd finally get up to 12,000 to 20,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day by doing it. Now you would end up eventually sitting on the toilet. But on the other hand, it's a much better scenario to sit on a toilet than to lie under a tombstone. And you could, in other words, IV vitamin C is important, but if you're really in a bad situation, you can just force yourself to take large amounts of vitamin C on an hourly basis till you get bowel tolerance, and then again back off a bit.
Well, also from my own experience, I mean, I can casually take probably 10 grams a day.
Right,
and that was even before I discovered, which we'll talk about more later, the Medi-C Plus, which is my new favorite formula. I get no anything for saying that, but it's a great formula. But we'll talk about that in a bit. But I've been taking vitamin C for long enough that I can casually take 3 to 5 grams or 6 grams at a time. And you know, if I take that for a couple of hours, if I'm working on trying to fight something off, or perhaps even just an allergic reaction, or because I live in an agricultural area, sometimes they'll spray out here. I live in a lot of vineyard country, and they'll spray. They'll come out at the dawn's early light, pre-light, so we can't see them spraying, but I know they do it because I've seen them. And I can feel it in the morning. I'll high-dose vitamin C for that morning, and by the afternoon, I'm fine. So it's just a matter of it's back to sort of your thing of common sense, a combination of common sense and self-care.
And what's happening in the vitamin C is getting rid of your histamine, which is which is a bad reaction.
Is there more there?
No, I think I'm through with that topic.
Diana, I want to ask you, I know that we'd had a bit of a conversation backstage the other day about this. You have thoughts about how to, or why not, or I have all sorts of bad words in my mind, so that's why I'm stumbling, about the idea of why couldn't we take some of the money that we're putting into getting kids back into schools and just take a little tiny amount of it and look at vitamin C. Would you talk about that whole idea? Because I think that's this one.
Well, it really stems from what I was saying earlier about, you know, we need to give modern decision makers some evidence that they can stand behind. They will not risk their careers in the absence of evidence. And unfortunately, there is not yet a body of evidence that is of the highest order, you know, clinical trials that are controlled, triple blind, based on coronavirus, using vitamin C. So we need some of those kinds of trials to get going. And I look at the staggering dollar volume that is being pumped into the really serious problem of getting kids back in school. We have to get our young kids back in school because we know how bad it is for them cumulatively for their lifetimes to be out of school. So we want our kids to be back in school. And we're throwing millions, in the case of a recent estimate from Ontario, potentially billions of dollars towards making the schools safe through the purchasing of gloves and masks and disinfectants and hiring cleaners and so on. And I'm thinking if we could only just put a little bit of money towards some very easy to do clinical studies on the effectiveness of vitamin C for teachers and students in schools, and compare controlled studies, controlled trials of kids that get the vitamin, teachers that get the vitamin, and schools where kids and teachers don't get the vitamin. And within a period of time, I think we'd be able to say, we've got an evidence base that allows us to, put in place the policies and the protocols in workplaces and schools that would allow everyone to kind of have a better chance at fighting the coronavirus. We all know, those of us that study this issue deeply are very confident that things will be better if only we did that. But the people that have to put their careers on the line and put, their reputations on the line won't do it in 2020 without that evidence base. And I really can't understand why the governments are not putting the small amount of money that would be necessary to do this forward. That's where I think our media folks are kind of falling down, because they're not doing their homework to get the word out and kind of, motivate action.
Well, they're going, Diana, in the opposite direction. There were schools recently raided by the FBI, and because they were giving intravenous vitamin C. So that there's a lot of fear there in the among the medical profession that if they do go just a little bit outside of the regular channels, they're in trouble. And furthermore,
you look at what's happened to the research community. It is virtually impossible these days to do any research on children. You can't. You constantly see, even with all drugs, that it's not been tested on pregnant women and it's not been tested on children, because the ethical rationales are difficult to make, and the risks are seemingly too high for people to take. So, you don't have those kinds of things happening. And back in 1950, when Dr. Klenner was doing his work, he was not going to be punished by the medical establishment the same way that doctors today would be terribly punished and ostracized if they were to do anything in the absence of permission.
Well, he wasn't punished, Diana, but he was ostracized. In other words, nobody listened to him. That research of Dr. Klenner's should have hit the headlines of every newspaper in the world, and it just collected dust. And if you ask the average doctor today, do you believe that high doses of vitamin C can cure polio? I bet you not 5% would know about it if that.
And is that because, do you think part of that is contributed to by its, well, I was going to say it was blocked by the medical schools, but it just seems like the medical schools are not just they, I'll talk about it from the other side, that I've talked to, I've done a number of shows with Gwen Olson, who was for almost 15 years a pharmaceutical rep. And then one day she woke up and she went, my God, what am I doing? I mean, really had an aha moment. And then she wrote a book about how she was trained really to be almost like a spy, in the sense of really getting enrolled in the doctor's life and being their lifeline and remembering the kids' birthdays, all those kind of subtle NLP kind of creepy things. And she wrote a book, and then she left the country about that experience. Yes. It's really, if we had somebody like that for vitamin C, it would be amazing out there teaching people about, look, here's this amazing thing.
Diana is so right. You could pick a half a dozen schools and say, we're going to give a small amount of vitamin C and a small amount of vitamin D both of which are totally safe. And we got another half a dozen schools on the other side or aren't going to get it, and go through the influenza season. And they would quickly, and I'm sure they would quickly find that the school that was getting the vitamin C and D didn't have the illness that the other school had. And that wouldn't cost, it wouldn't cost a bundle. It would cost a relative, Dan is right, it would cost a fraction of what they're spending elsewhere.
And there would, is there any potential harm there? I mean, Diana, is there? Can you imagine that there's any potential harm of taking a school and giving them vitamin C and vitamin D?
No, there is no harm. That's the irony of the situation. There's no harm. We know that vitamin C is not going to hurt anybody. But there is a culture of just stepping away from research that involves children. People will not do it. And that is wrong. So the hurdles that the researchers would need to go through in order to get permission to do this kind of research in schools with real children is, I think, too monumental. Now we need to cut that. We need to change that so that we can kind of get back into common sense approaches to solving these problems. Right now, like you said, Richard, you know, if you were to go onto the campus of a medical school, pretty much anywhere in the world, you won't find that the doctors in training are being educated on natural remedies. That's because the culture in these places is to reproduce excellence at the highest levels in each field. And in each field, excellence at the highest level is a medical model that involves, you know, pinnacle expertise on not natural stuff, but all the stuff that has been discovered over the past 50, 100 years that involves, you know, pharmaceutical products, that involves advanced surgical techniques, that involves, you know, all these different fields of medicine. And there's no glory in looking at the basics, like, are you getting a good night's sleep at night and how much is that affecting your health? Are you getting the exercise you need? Are you taking the vitamins and getting the diet that you know, we all know is good for you? That's not exciting for medical school students, and that's a problem too.
Well, and they don't really advocate for the idea, this horrific concept in Western medicine, I suspect, the idea of getting patients involved in self-care. I don't mean that if I have a gash in my arm that I'm going to try and stitch it up myself. I know people like that. I'm not one of those. However, there is this whole, like you and your father talk about, the idea of, I think GIF has this wonderful thing about, we have two legs, we should be using them. Get up, walk, move around. I wanted to try that. But we're not really, we don't have anywhere, I mean, I'm old enough that it seemed like for a while at least we had, when I was in elementary school, we had maybe a health class, which was mostly a joke, and the idea of home ec, where you'd learn to be cooking or doing some kind of things. We had some of that. That's all disappeared. But we have no direction of, We've been trained, I almost said indoctrinated. The audience can take their choice, trained or indoctrinated, into the idea of something's wrong, I'm going to the doctor will give me something, I'll feel better. Versus, something's wrong, why is that thing wrong? Why is my cholesterol high? What's your diet? There's no conversation about that. There's no intake because it isn't something. I don't know what the word is. It isn't part of the protocol to think that way. Here's a drug. Take this. I'm of an age now in my late 60s where if I go to a doctor, which is very rare, they immediately look at a list and like, are you taking this? Are you taking this? Are you taking this? Because they consider it to be age appropriate, that I'm supposed to be on statins, that I should be on some sort of blood pressure medication, that I should be on certain things because I'm of a certain age. I'm not. And I have bad words for why I feel that way. So it's a weird system. So I love that idea that you have of, why can't we find some vitamin C company to fund that study? What would be but like you say, kids are a tricky category. Goodness knows we don't want them to be taking vitamin C and being healthier. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think the key part of the solution is going to be taking a much more interdisciplinary approach where we're not, like you say, like thinking that your doctor is your be all and end all of what determines your health, that's got to change too. So, you know, it's so much more than that, and we all know that. And
yeah.
We always, my father and I always encourage people when they're needing some fresh ideas about how to take care of themselves, walk into a natural health store, and in that store, ask some of the employees for some thoughts, because these are the people who are more likely to have the perspective that we're talking about right now. They care about, you know, how you're doing as a human, as a person, the whole person, not the medical drugs that you're taking or the, you know, which prescriptions you're on.
People need to get a second opinion, you know, from the health food stores, which certainly have a, you know, pile of information to give. Second opinions are always important. It reminds me of the story of Groucho Marx, who said, I was married by a judge. I should have asked for a jury. You know, second opinions are always important, and if people would go into their health food stores and ask the people there about natural remedies, they're well informed, and they say no one who walks into a health food store ever gets ill or dies. Where on the other hand, you walk with a prescription out of a doctor's office, you never know what that's going to do to you.
I want to jump now. I have so many things to say about that, but I want to jump to talking about how did the formulation of Medi-C Plus come about? As I'm a big fan of it since I discovered it from the last show we did with you, how did that formulation come about? And talk about that, because I think it's such a great product.
Well, I had a heart attack when I was 74. And if it hadn't been for Linus Pauling, we wouldn't be talking today, or I wouldn't be talking here today. So that after my heart attack, all my cardiologists said, you know, you're an absolute fool if you don't take cholesterol-lowering medication. But because I had interviewed Linus Pauling on these two occasions, I was convinced that I was more likely safer in his hands than in my physician's hands, because he one of the first things he told me when I interviewed him was that just a small amount of vitamin C, if the population had a small amount of vitamin C on a daily basis, the amount of cardiovascular disease, namely the number one heart disease that kills most people, coronary attack, would be vastly, vastly lowered. And so I decided to take 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C and 5,000 of lysine, which is an amino acid. And I did this. I was taking 30 pills a day to get, you know, the 10,000 milligrams into my body. And I finally, luckily, ran into a president of a pharmaceutical company. And when I told him what I was doing, he said, "Well, you know, I think we could make a powder out of vitamin C, and you could stop having to swallow all these pills." And about 4 months later, Medi-C Plus was born, and of course I've been taking it ever since. It doesn't matter what kind of vitamin C you take, but this is a very pleasant vitamin C. It's you can have a berry flavor, or you can have a lime flavor, and a single scoop that's in the package contains 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C, and 400 milligrams of lysine, so you can measure the amount whether you want to take 2,000 or 4,000 or 6,000 a day by just the number of scoops you require. So that's how it really started, Richard. And fortunately, I ran into a situation where we had Medi-C Plus in a very, very short time.
It's a really great. I'm so happy to hear that, because, as I say, once I interviewed you and Diana last time, I immediately went out to try to find some. Unfortunately for me, it's a Canadianly created product, so it's longer to get here. But once I started getting it and started taking it, it's my new favorite thing because the flavor is very mild. It doesn't have that high sort of ascorbic acid, straight ascorbic acid, which I'd taken for a long time, kind of a slight bite to it. And it's just so easy to take a scoop. I'm not pimping the product here. I want to be clear, but I'm just saying in terms of a delivery system, it's really great because you just toss a scoop in water and I'm getting 2 grams of vitamin C and 1,300 milligrams of lysine and a little bit of magnesium and it dissolves and it's easy to take. I mean, it's so easy to take because I too have taken way too many pills in my lifetime between being an herbalist and having been supplement oriented for decades. And so it's just always great to find a powder that works, it tastes good, and it's such a great way. It replaces so many bottles of pills. I'm so happy. So thank you.
I guess the best way to get it in the United States is through by Amazon.
Yes, Amazon has been the best. It still takes quite a while. I don't know what the I don't know what the lag is between getting it from here to from Canada to here, but this seems I don't know if they have to like dog sniff it or what it is, but there's just a lag of long. It's like we're hundreds. It's like it's coming from. I can get products faster from China. I don't know what it is, but it's
there's no doubt
about
it. Our Canadian border is tough to cross, I guess.
It is. It's surprisingly tough. But once you've figured it out, get it, whether it's Amazon or I found it a couple of other places. But it's such a great way to get vitamin C in, and it's easy. Most people are a little spooked by the idea of taking 2 grams at once. I'm not. I've had, as I say, with the sprays around here, I've had times when I've taken 2 scoops at once just to really get a low dose immediately. And it's really great. I can't say enough good things about it, obviously.
And it does come, it comes in pill form too, but I prefer the powder.
Yeah, when I want something, I like a powder because I don't have to wait for my body to break it down. Plus, I think there's some benefit oral in the mouth absorption as well, getting the blood-brain barrier and all that, and just getting it right into all the tissues as much as possible. So I think it's a wonderful delivery system.
So, Richard, maybe the one thing for your listeners would be, I know you don't want to plug stuff, but I'll shamelessly plug a website that we have that, you know, contains
Please.
All of the articles that it's www.docgif.com. So it's DOCGIFF for docgif.com. And this website has all of the articles, more than I think over 1,200 of them posted now that my father's written over the years. And we're loading more of them all the time, and a new one gets loaded each week. And the recommendations for sort of the natural approaches to health that we've been arguing over for years are all posted on the website as well. So listeners can check it out and get a lot of information that way.
It's a great resource. I have 4 or 5 links in the show notes that people can look at where I posted some of my what I will call favorite articles. One of my particular favorite articles is the peewee amounts of vitamin C won't stop heart attacks. That kind of attitude. I like that kind of attitude. Like, come on, really? You know, and then there's always that slight edge, that little bit of like, come on, really? You think 60 mm-hmm. milligrams is going to stop your heart attack? Let's get real here. But, you know,
yeah.
And it's a great resource. The DocGif site is an amazing, truly, this is another one of those sites where I say, you know, sit down and have a beverage because there's a lot of great reading here. And the articles, because they're newspaper columns, I believe, originally, are short, but packed with lots of great information.
Yeah, it's fun for those people that have been following my dad's articles for years. You know, he's developed a large following, and it's that attitude that he has written into the columns that makes them so appealing. You know, it's not just a reporting on the facts; it's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek humor as well, and often a history lesson. Dad, you've always pointed out those people who you think have been great leaders and those that have been not so great leaders, and there's some health connection in there somewhere, but it's always fun to see what you're what you're putting out for people.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, yeah. Richard, that I find very, very exciting is that I'm now in a number of California newspapers. And
it's a field newspaper. It's shocking.
It's good to be a part of your lovely state, and I just enjoy getting out to other areas, and I nearly practiced in California at one point. I had an internship given to me at the Willow Hospital. I forgot the name of it now. But it's a beautiful state, and it's sort of nice to be a part of it.
It was funny. It was one of the things that I reviewed. I listened to a radio show you did with some people in Bakersfield. That's why I know about the Bakersfield newspaper. And Bakersfield is sort of in the Central Valley of California, which is the agricultural center of California. People don't think of California. I don't know what people think of California. I have my own opinions, but we're a huge agricultural producing state. I mean, without California, there would be no tacos with chopped iceberg lettuce. Not that I'm a fan, but I'm just saying everybody's always like throwing iceberg lettuce onto a taco. And this is where 90% of the iceberg lettuce comes from, along with artichokes and everything. And so it was fun to listen to that show, knowing that that's kind of in the heartland of the ag world that is Central California. So it was fun to hear you. I'm like, yes, Bakersfield. I don't often hear about Bakersfield. It's not like it's a metropolitan area we talk about. It's a small, great little California community.
Yeah. Well, there's no rhyme or reason to where we're showing up, but we're in pockets all over North America, and it's lucky for the folks that get to read it.
It is. It's almost as simple as taking a scoop of vitamin C. Of the Medici Plus. And really, I'm not tempting it, but I am kind of, because it's such a great delivery system, and it's so easy to use. And I find it beneficial just for what I'm wrangling with always, as I say, with the pesticides and the sprays here. And now that you've clarified for me that it's knocking down the histamine response, that explains so much about my immediate results with using it at higher doses, even a couple of scoops. But
I wonder, Richard, how many of your listeners are taking 1 gram of vitamin C 3 times a day, decreasing the risk of getting the coronavirus? It'd be interesting to know. I guess we'll never know. But just that simple fact could relieve them of a tremendous concern.
It really is amazing. One of the reasons I do a radio show is because my friends are tired of hearing about it. So they'd rather have me go on air and talk to people about it than tell them about what I think is important. And it's amazing how many people are, I can't say they're resistant to it, but they just don't get the significance of taking the 3 grams a day. For me, I've spilled more than 3 grams already this morning. I take a high dose of vitamin C. Basis.
You know, Richard, even if they took just 1 gram a day, because there is a study that happened a few years ago when there was a bad case of influenza in an elderly nursing home. And they gave everyone in the nursing home just 200 milligrams, not 1,000, 200 milligrams. And it decreased the rate of mortality by an amazing 80%.
Wow.
Just 200 milligrams a day, and 80% fewer people died. So, it's no laughing matter that a small amount of vitamin C can even go a long way.
It's really amazing. It's such a fabulous supplement, and we're not as smart as our dogs. I think I'll go toward that and move toward the close. We're not as smart as our dog. My dog's making 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C just laying here.
That's right.
That's just hanging out. It's really wonderful.
Richard, you'll never find anyone who loves you more than your dog.
That's correct. That's right. And looked at me like, oh, you poor sap, you're not making vitamin C. I am. You know, it's true. So true.
Do you remember Harry Truman, when he arrived in Washington as president, he said, remember, if you want a friend in Washington, go out and buy a dog.
Boy, is that the truth. Wow. And you're in Canada, you're able to say that casually. Wow. That's a whole other show. Shocked to find we're here at this time. Would you, Diana, would you say the name of the website again so that our listeners have that so they can write that down? And I'll remind them they can go
for
to
sure.
the link after the show, and all the show notes and some of the articles that I've pointed out are in the show notes.
For sure. Of course, you can always Google Gifford Jones, and chances are you'll get there. But the website is www.docgiff, so docgiff.com.
Thank you. And thank you both. Fun as always. Thank you.
Always good to be in your show. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks very
Take
much.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
You too.